Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host A. Trunk.
What's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk, and welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Thank you for checking it out. As always, it is greatly appreciated. And as I tell you every week, everything you hear on this podcast originated on my Sirius XM radio show, Trunk Nation, which is heard live Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 Eastern on Faction Talk, Sirius XM Channel 103, or listen anytime you want, live or on demand with the Sirius XM app. Don't have Sirius XM? Well, go to SiriusXM.com/Trunk Nation. And learn more and get involved and maybe get a free trial. Anything you want to do, hope you join us each and every day for the daily show. If you only listen to the podcast and you can get SiriusXM, you are only getting a tiny fraction of what I do on the radio live every day. We give you some good stuff, though, here on the podcast. And this week we are finishing up the Monsters of Rock cruise broadcasts. I broadcast 3 days from the cruise ship. The annual Monsters of Rock cruise, which I host every year. We had some great guests on day three. We're going to bring you that day today on the podcast. This will be our final of the Monsters of Rock cruise series. The guests you'll hear from include Ace Frehley, along with his drummer Scott Coogan, KK Downing, along with his singer Tim Ripper Owens, and Joe Satriani and Richie Kotzen together. My old That Metal Show partner Jim Florentine drops by as well. You never know who's going to drop by, especially on a place like the Monsters of Rock cruise. So here's what went down on day three from the ship. Enjoy. As I mentioned, I am joined by three of the members of KK's Priest. That would be, of course, KK Downing. You can't have KK's Priest without KK Downing.
Hi, everybody.
The metal legend himself. You know, it's a. I always say the three most important bands in the history of heavy metal are Sabbath, Priest, and Maiden. And we had Steve Harris here yesterday, and we got KK here today. So unless we can get Tony Iommi to the Bahamas right now, we're doing pretty darn good, though. So KK, thank you for being here. And we also have AJ from KK's Priest as well, the other half of the guitar duo. Yeah. KK's mic is getting limp on him. It's falling down.
I got it. I can support you. It'll come check.
It'll be all right.
They make a pill for that.
I was waiting for Tim to run with
I
that.
I was trying not to.
I knew I you were going to. And, of course, that would be comedian Tim Ripper Owens on the end over there. You're good, Ken. Right there is good. Should be all right. So, anyway, you guys have been out there and about on this cruise. You've played twice already. We've done a Q&A together. And Ken, I got to tell you, man, I mean, I was saying it before you got here, everybody is just raving about this band and having you back and playing guitar and playing metal again and up there on that stage. It's got to feel great, the response you're getting here.
Yeah, I mean, what a great vibe on this boat. I mean, it's like my first time, you know, and what an experience, all the fans, and it's just, I could do this year round. Can you guys?
Yeah, good. Sure.
And I've got a nice cabin as well with a great view, and a well-stocked bar. What more could you want?
Exactly, exactly. How has it felt for you, though? Because, I mean, it's been a couple records here with the band, and you've got the original material. Of course, you play some Priest classics as well. But to be reconnected with this audience and in this world again after not doing it for a while, it's got to feel pretty good.
Yeah, I think it was 2009 when I was last in the States. And so, obviously, to be back, you know, I know we're in the Bahamas now, but we're still on an American ship, aren't we? You know, I mean, I guess there's people from
everywhere.
On the ship,
crazy. Yeah.
Which is great. So it's pretty cosmopolitan, but... we kick off, we're playing again tomorrow in Fort Lauderdale, and we're going to be working our way up all up the East Coast on this run, you know, New York, Buffalo, Philadelphia, we're really stoked. I certainly am to be back in the States, and first time for AJ. So
it's your first time in the US?
Yeah, ever, first time ever.
Wow, welcome, man.
Yeah,
welcome. So tell me about AJ. Tell me how you ended up landing this gig and being a part of this and playing guitar with KK in the band.
Well, I've known KK for nearly 20 years now. He produced a couple of my other band's Hostile records.
Okay.
Family friend as well. Went to school with my uncle. And he's pretty much mentored me as a guitar player since I was a teenager. So how cool is that, everybody? Is that for a mentor?
So it was almost like you were grooming him for this gig at some point, huh, KK?
Well, you know, I think I always, you know, saw AJ as obviously the younger version of me, and and I've watched him over the years come good as a player. You know, he looks good, plays good, performs good, and what more could you want?
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, the guy down on the end you have had a lot of history with, so it was no surprise for him to be coming into the fold. It makes all the sense in the world for Tim Ripper Owens to be singing in KK's Priest. Tim, what was your first reaction when KK hit you up about being a part of this?
Well, I was excited. You know, we've always had a good friendship and just working with him again. You know, we did that one quick show, and AJ played on that, and David Ellefson played on bass. It was like a little, it started as a David Ellefson show, and then we just kind of did a jam, and they flew me there. And that started it, but then I got real excited when he asked if I'd want to do it, and we talked about it, and then I heard the demos of the songs and for the first record, and I thought it was perfect, you know. I thought it was absolutely perfect, so I was excited I thought it just made so much sense to have us both together. You know, it really did. I mean, it was something that I think the fans were going to want, and we wanted.
KK, was it just a natural thought for you to go to Tim? Was it just a no-brainer?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because, you know, I mean, I was never one to stray or want to play with other people, you know, and do records or jam with anyone else. You know, so... circumstances led to Tim actually being in the band, so we did a couple of albums, recording and writing and touring, and so I felt very, very comfortable, obviously. But he's the best in the world, surely, in the metal world, you know, because I've always been a big fan of guys that could really hit the high notes, high and long. You know, that's always excited me ever since early Deep Purple, you know, with Ian Gillan and guys
sure.
like that. And there's not many people that can do what Tim does in the world, so I'm very, very fortunate to have him on board.
It is remarkable to watch Tim do what you do up there, and vocally to be able to nail that stuff. It's just incredible, whether it's the new stuff or, of course, the classic Priest stuff, or now the opportunity for you and KK to do some stuff from the two Judas Priest records you made, which I'm sure is important to you because you feel like that stuff's been a bit overlooked.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we go on, we'll put some more in there. The set will change and get bigger and more KK's Priest, but I'd love to do one-on-one and Cathedral Spires and Jugulator in time, but you know, it's nice to get up there and play. I mean, Burning Hell sounds amazing, right? It sounds right when you play it, together. It sounds right.
Yes. So we only had like 1 hour spot, didn't we? Which was, you know, we crammed in as much as we possibly could,
right?
And changed the set around a little bit for the second performance. But obviously, we love to see everyone. At a later date, come to one of our shows and see our full show and production. And so you're all invited, everyone.
Official invite from KK. So KK, was it an, the thing that I think is really impressive about you starting this is that you easily could have gone out and toured with this band for 5 years if you wanted to, just playing the Judas Priest catalog, because it's that big of a catalog and it's that great of a catalog. But instead, you right out of the gate not only made one but two albums pretty close to each other of original material. Tell me about that thought process, because obviously making this also a band that is making new music was an important thing for you.
Absolutely, yes. It was it was a no-brainer to me. I'm thinking, if we're going to do this, we need some new material. You know, it has to be, you know, we have a new identity, KK's Priest, so we have to have new material to go along with that. And the original, my original idea was actually to release two albums in 1 year, and I was very close to doing that on this. You know, isn't that right, AJ?
Yeah, really,
I mean,
close.
It was just the COVID got in the way, wasn't it, and everything. Yeah. So we just took the foot off the gas for a little bit, you know. But still got two albums out within 2 years, which was great. Because back in the day, we did actually release two albums in 1 year. So I'm told, back in the 70s. You know, so how good is that? You know, that's a really exciting thing. So that was the goal, but unfortunately didn't quite complete it this time around. But yet to have two albums, you know, untoured, we've still only done like how many gigs we've done, guys? 13 or something like that.
Yeah, it's around.
You know, so we just whippersnappers, we're new kids on the block. So.
And that was the thing, though, in the 70s, there were a lot of bands that would do two records a year, like every 6-7 months apart, they would do. You pump out the music and all that. KK, you wrote both of these records, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about that, because that is probably something you had not done. Were you writing even in your downtime and away from Judas Priest and compiling songs? Or
no, not really. But obviously, as a guitar player, I did have some catalog, you know, that you take with you throughout the years of, you know, that you can look through. But 90% everything was fresh, you know. But yeah, as the story goes, we did that gig, didn't we, in Wolverhampton at the end of 2019. And then Christmas came and the winter set in. I'm thinking, I want to put this band together, but really not put the cart before the horse. I'm thinking, need to see if there's, I can still write songs, you know, it's been a while. So as not to embarrass myself. So I thought, I just shut the curtains and just got on with it and got into the flow of things, and everything's happened really fast, which was great. And I felt really rejuvenated, you know, and I felt really confident, you know, that I could give the guys a ring and say, okay, guys, you know, got some songs, you know, we can put this band together and do this thing. And it just went at a very fast rate of knots. And so just couldn't hold the horses back. It just was out of the stable doors, the horses just bolted, and now here we are.
Did you write the lyrics too?
Yeah.
So have you done that? Had you done that before in Priest? Have you ever written lyrics?
Yeah, myself and Glenn did occasionally get, you know, make contribution, you know, with Rob, because everybody in the band's got lyrical ideas,
right?
You know. AJ's written lyrics before.
You know,
Tim certainly has.
You know, AJ, you know, he's helps write as well. The second record, you know, Strike of the Viper. Yeah. And so he's, you know, I think it gives it a different edge on the second record where you can hear AJ come in and have ideas. But it's great these two are by each other, so they still get to get together and, you know,
physically.
Ideas. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the material's great. It's so great to have... you know, have new music as well as the classic stuff. And obviously, you know, it always begs the question when you're dealing with the catalog of a band like Judas Priest up against the newer material, when you put a set list together, you've got that battle of what do you play from the new record and what do you play as far as the old classics. And having seen the band on this cruise now, you've done a good job at kind of mixing it up, and it's pretty much about a 50-50 balance, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I think it is. Yeah. And Like I say, I feel compelled to play, obviously, stuff that I've written and recorded and promoted and toured with for so long. You know, all of that's a part of my heritage and legacy and stuff. And I enjoy it, and hopefully the band enjoys it, and the audience enjoy those songs as well. But, you know, we could just as easily just play all KK's Priest stuff, because we've got more than ample material, and maybe that might happen in the future, but we'll see how it goes.
We just want to put a good show together. You know, we want the fans to be happy. Some fans want this, some fans want that. You know, we're trying to go right in the middle and go, we want to make us happy. We want to make a good show, a fun show.
KK, I'm also interested in the name of the band. How did you settle and come up with that name? Why did you go there? How did you, you know, figure out that was the best thing you wanted to do?
Well, you know, it was a tough one, because, you know, what we had, the gig that we did at the Steel Mill with Dave Ellison, that got labelled instantly as Mega Priest. And I'm thinking, that's cool. You know, if it wasn't a hybrid name, we could have gone with that, and that would have been cool. But other than that, nothing really, you know, I didn't want to totally detach myself from who I am and what I am, my heritage, my legacy, my history, my whole life. You know, especially now, I'm 72 years old. And I'm thinking, I don't really want a complete makeover and start over again, you know. And I always thought that I would inevitably, there would be a demand from the fans for me to go out there and play Sinner, you know, and Breaking the Law. And
Victim of Changes.
And stuff like that. And why not? You know, so that was always probably going to be on the cards. And so it seemed to be fairly apt, if I was going to do this, to, you know, bring that sound, you know, and that visual together. And obviously with me and Tim, we've been doing that before. We did all of that before.
We did it.
So, you know, it is, for all intents and purposes, you know, what else?
Circumvented what the promoters were going to do anyway. Because if they booked you, you knew whatever you called the band, it was going to say in print underneath featuring KK Downing of Judas Priest.
Yeah.
So by calling the band KK's Priest, you've covered it all in one name.
I know I've said it many times in interviews, but I started life as a young kid. I was a priest for like 5 decades now. And it's kind of hallmarked, tattooed on my heart, I suppose. And I can't shed that that skin. It's indelible. It's a part of me. And for better or for worse, I'll take the heat if it comes my way. But, you know, we are KK's Priest. New video out today, guys. Keeper of the Graves. I don't know if anybody's checked it out. But if you look at that video, it's just got Priest all over it, hasn't it? You know, KK's Priest, and that's it, you know. So there's that synergy with that good against evil, you know, and everything has that kind of ecclesiastical mystery that surrounds it. And that's always what Priest should have been to me anyway. I like it.
Yeah, I know. I saw that you released a new video today, but I haven't had a chance to watch it, but I did get the press release on it. So that I look forward to watching that when I get a chance and get some decent internet. The last thing, two more quick things for me, and then we'll take a couple questions from the audience before we get to our next guest. But I wonder for you, finally, Judas Priest went into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a couple years ago, which was beyond overdue, beyond belief. You know, how do you, looking back on that whole evening and how it went, I mean, of course you played with the band again, you were included in it. Did you feel good about how it went? Were you looking for something more? Did you feel a sense of closure? Or, you know, what are your thoughts now looking back on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction?
Well, you know, it was one of those things. I was thinking, should I do it? Shouldn't I? What's it going to be like? You know, and, you know, it was one of those things. I decided to go there and just do it, you know, in the way that I'd always done it before, just get out there and rock out. You know, it wasn't particularly, you know, behind the scenes wasn't very pleasant. You know, we were totally segregated, myself and Les, from everybody. But you know, it was a bit, you know, it could have been different, really. We were told that we were guests of the band, you know, by the band's management, which was a bit ugly, really, to be honest. That was a bit uncalled for. But no, I just went there and did it, and that's it, and came home.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're there. I was glad you went up and played, and it was the right thing to do, and I think it was right thing for the fans to do, to see you up there again with Priest, even if it's the last time you do it, and it was the right way to do it. And I give, no matter how it happened, I give everybody a lot of credit for making it happen, because there's so many times where you long for bands to be in that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then because of whatever infighting, you get no performance, or you get not the guys up there that you want. And the fact that you were able to do it, and however it worked, I think it's, you know, it's a testament to you guys putting the fans first and foremost, because that's what it's really about.
That's exactly it. We needed to do that. We needed to be together. You know, we need to put that little piece of history in place. Finally made the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so it's pretty good.
There's also, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's a Judas Priest documentary in the works. Have you been approached to be in it? Have you been interviewed for it? Are you participating?
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So Tom Morello, it's part of his company, him and Sam. And again, I decided, you know, it's a big piece of me and my history. And they said that they really wanted and needed me to be on board with it. And so, yeah, the guys flew to England and we did everything that we needed to do. So I'll be looking forward to seeing that come out sometime, maybe next year.
And the last question for me before, and if you want to ask KK's Priest a question, any of the guys in the band, you could just line up at this microphone. We'll grab just a few questions until our next guest gets here, which is going to be Ace Frehley. But one last thing for me. I was watching you after I introduced the band on the first performance you did here on the cruise. And about two songs in, you were out at the foot of the stage. And you pulled off a move that I don't know if it was intentional or not. But you did a little crowd surfing, my friend.
No, yeah. I totally lost my balance. I don't know whether... I blame it on the boat. But yeah, I felt myself, you know, in that position where you know you can't go that way. The only way is that way. And I'm thinking, if I end up on the floor here, that could be the end of the show. And but the guys, I'm glad they caught me and just pushed me back on. You know, that's happened to me before, you know, years ago. But yeah, it was pretty unique, very scary. I was scared.
I was talking to Ripper about it. I said,
when I saw it happening, I started in my mind learning songs on guitar.
my friend and photographer Ron's got a photo of it.
Well, that's
there it is. You see, it looks like you're crowd surfing.
Yeah.
That is no. You sold that amazingly. There is no way that looks like that's accidental.
As we say in England, I was a goner. You know, for that, you know, those few seconds, I thought that's it. No way back.
Amazingly impressive recovery. So you didn't miss a note.
Thank you for my saviors. Thank you very much. Is that one there? Yeah. You're a gentleman. Thank you so much.
One of the guys that saved KK is in the audience, the guys right in the front row. That's fantastic. Okay, so we'll grab a few questions here. We have a nice lady who is in a bikini standing in front of us at a microphone.
We have a mermaid. She's fresh out the sea.
Ron, would you help us out and tilt that microphone down to this nice young lady right here? Ron. Yeah, you, right there.
Right here.
So, you afraid?
Right.
Go. Help her out a little bit. She's much shorter than the mic stand, and sitting there like, what? Come on, there you go. What's your name? Where are you from?
My name is Marie, and I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
Nice.
All right.
And welcome, Marie.
I am a total groupie.
All right.
I tell you what, I just wanted to compliment you, first of all. My take, the sexiest I've ever seen you was in that video, Don't Go, and you're walking over those white rabbits.
Oh, right, yeah.
Remember that?
I do, yeah.
And then all the girls are all over you in the end. Did you make that shit up?
That was fun, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was a lot of fun.
All right, okay.
He doesn't remember the rabbit.
So that means you got with a lot of women, right?
That was good, yes, it was good. It was most pleasant.
Fiends, I drove 24 hours to get to Miami, and I brought my golf clubs.
All right.
I was wondering if perhaps you would have or find time
give
to play
lessons.
A game of golf while you're in Fort Lauderdale, and could we play?
Well, there's miniature golf right on top of the ship.
No, I want to.
There's a miniature golf course right on top of the ship.
But he's a golfer.
Unfortunately, we get off the boat and go straight to the first gig.
He's good in the rough.
And then we leave after the show,
I had to bring him just in case.
Okay, yeah. Just in case. But we'll be coming through Kansas City. We're going to be doing another U.S. tour starting September the 2nd.
Are you going to stay long enough for a game of golf?
He is now.
We'll be there for 6 weeks.
Yeah. We're going to be in Kansas City 6 weeks.
He just decided he's staying for a year.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And
might just
bring his clubs.
And I love your singer.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
You love Tim.
My name's Tim.
His name's Tim.
I know.
Yeah, he's a golfer too. He's a golfer too. You know.
So you guys both bring your clubs. You go down there. You spend a few weeks. You golf with. Is it Marie? You said.
Yes.
You have a good time with Marie.
Yeah.
Marie,
yeah,
will you wear that?
That would be great. I'm jumping out of my skin. I'm so excited to be like this close to y'all.
Yeah, you're jumping out for sure. So thank you.
Thank you,
Marie.
Pretty Marie.
Appreciate
thank you very
that.
Much.
Thank you. Marie is going to do some golfing with KK's Priest. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, how you guys doing?
We're good, thank you.
Nice to meet you, KK.
Thank you very
much. My name's Brendan. I'm from Virginia. I'd like to ask you, so when you guys make your songs, how do you come about coming up with it, just in general?
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Let me think now. You just... it's kind of half from the guitar and half from yourself, I think, you know, because we're always trying to do something different, something unique, you know, and sometimes it comes easy, sometimes you have to work at it, but there's no set rules, is the team, you know, AJ, it's just some mornings you can get up and just pick up the guitar and things just flood out, and other times nothing comes, you know, so you just have to work with it. But the secret is really, doesn't matter what you do, make sure you put it down, record it, because it might not sound that great today, but tomorrow you can come back and you think, I see it now, you know, I know how to make this work. So I wish I could be more helpful, but really it's just one of those skills, you just have to keep working and working hard at it. But the main thing is, the things that come natural to you without being influenced by anyone or anything else are always going to be the best ideas and the best songs.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
You guys are great.
Thank you.
Love the concerts.
Thank you, mate.
See you later.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Joe.
Joe from Pittsburgh.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Ripper.
Yes.
We have a long history.
Yeah.
Are you going to do another restaurant?
No. No, I just got too busy. I had to get back on the road. I mean, it was nice to have, but when you travel as much as I do, and my partner had to get back to his stuff, it just was just too hard to travel and do it, you know? So.
But I think Bar Rescue ruined that.
No, they made it better.
We're just going to hang out.
But, you know, Bar Rescue is fake. Oh. I mean, they actually called us to do the show and asked if we would do it and signed a
what
nice
is bar
contract.
Rescue? It's like when you go to a shitty bar and the guy comes in and redoes everything, right?
Yeah. So John what happens Taffer is it's all scripted, you know, and everything I do is scripted, and you do scenes you wear the same outfit 4 days in a row, and you do.
You mean reality TV isn't real?
Yeah, I know, but people think that, you know. But it's kind of funny.
That's crazy.
Our buddy Nico's got a bar. We'll just we're going to go down there and freeload him.
Hopefully we get some rock and roll ribs. You've been there, right?
I've been to Nico's. It's fantastic. Nico's place. It's great. It's funny. I'll tell you. I'll give you a funny story about that. So we had Nico's been on the radio show with me countless times, and of course all the Maiden guys I've known forever. And we had I had Adrian Smith on our old TV show on That Metal Show. And Adrian had just come from the rib place. So Adrian, we asked him how it was, and he goes, oh, it was fantastic. The food was great. He goes, can't eat it too often, though. And I was like, why? And he goes, oh, you know, it's ribs and French fries, and you know, not so good. He goes, eat it all the time. He's not so good for the ticker. And I go, oh, yeah, obviously. And then shortly afterwards, Adrian, being the nice guy he is, he calls me up and he goes, can you edit that part out in the show about the ribs? He goes, I don't want Nick to get mad at me telling people to not go to his restaurant. I was like, Adrian, I think people know that ribs and fries is not health food. I think they know that that's not tofu at this point. But he was just like, you know, Adrian's such a nice guy. I didn't want to offend anyone, but it was pretty funny. But the food is great. And as you can see from my physique, I've never steered away from ribs and fries, so I'm all good. Anybody else with a question for KK or AJ or Tim before we let him go? Anybody else want to jump up to the mic? Got some shy people in here.
I like it.
All right. If nobody else is going up.
Hey, we want to say thanks to everybody, though, that came to the shows on here, because you were fantastic. We had the only show last night that they had to shut the doors, and everybody was waiting to get in, and it was jam-packed, and that was the only show on the cruise that they had to do that. They said it was the most people. So, and you were loud and sang it, and thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, people have been absolutely raving about the performance, and I'm glad. You know, KK, you and I talked a lot leading into you coming over with this, because obviously you ramped up with the first record, the second record. We did a bunch of radio and interview stuff, and the story was always, when are you going to get to America again? And now you're, well, again, we're in the Bahamas technically right now, but starting the show in Fort Lauderdale is tomorrow or Friday?
Tomorrow.
So you get right off the ship and go right to the gig.
Mount Dorham the next day. We do East Coast. It's an East Coast run, 16 shows a minute, but starting tomorrow.
And the support act is L.A. Guns, correct?
And Burning Witches.
Both L.A. Guns I know very, very well. Burning Witches I've heard good things about.
Fantastic.
But L.A. Guns is a great, totally real, raw, ripping rock band, man. That's going to be great to have them on before you. And Burning Witches, they're all women, right?
All women and just great players, really talented. And it's nice because they're a little heavier. L.A. Guns will bring it back a little bit with some good rock, hard rock, and then we'll get up and blow people's faces off.
Yeah, and where from here, KK, after the U.S. run, what's next?
Yeah, we go back to the U.K. and get ready for a European tour in May, and beginning of May. So we do a bunch of gigs there. We've got some nice festival gigs, headline festivals, Rock Hard Festival. We're headlining that show, and Stone, somewhere in England, Stone Dead. And some other things, playing Wacken, which is great. We're
as Ken would say, we're chock-a-block full of gigs. I mean, it's the rest of the year is probably going to be just loaded, you know? We're still booking them.
Well, I hope we get a lot more here in the U.S. because from what I saw on the ship, it's a killer band. So congratulations. I'm glad you got this thing humming. Check out the albums. Both albums are out now. And again, if you're on the East Coast listening right now, see the guys starting tomorrow on land at the Culture Room in Fort Lauderdale. Check your local listings wherever you're listening in the country to see if they're headed your way. And if they're not now, hopefully you guys will be able to come back with another run sometime
September.
In the future.
Yes, September. Yeah. September the 2nd. Yes.
Give it up, everybody, for AJ.
Thank you.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Joining me now, Ace is on his way here. He should be here shortly, any minute, actually. But joining me now is, we had Don sitting in the other day. My other partner from my old TV show, That Metal Show, Jim Florentine, is here. And Jim has been on board doing some comedy and some hosting as well, and having a great time. And Jim, you didn't get canceled from the cruise, at least.
No, it was my first show back since I got canceled.
Jim has been in the news quite a bit, along with a few other comics, because he had a gig in Seattle, and he was canceled from the gig. What happened there, Jim?
I don't know. I got booked, and then 2 weeks later, they sent an email to my agent and said, you know, me and three other comics that I know, we all have the same agent, said, you know, their comedy doesn't, you know, we have very progressive values here in Seattle, and their comedy doesn't align with our... They checked with the neighborhood, the community, and local comedians. They said, nah, the comedy doesn't align with the values we have here in our city.
So you were you and the other comics were bounced from the show.
All four of us were bounced.
And did you get paid still?
No. I mean, usually with the comedy, sometimes they'll give you like half up front, but it wasn't a gig till like September. So it wasn't that big of a deal. I actually laughed when I got the email. I thought it was pretty funny. And then the word got out there. And next thing I know, it's still in the news like 8 days later.
And didn't they realize that by doing that, they did you guys the biggest favor in the world? Because you got so much publicity from it. It was on the news. It was in the newspaper. It was everywhere. Like, it's actually, it reminded me of like when the records came out with the PMRC logo on it. It only made people want those records more.
It was insane. I mean, they offered to fly me out to Seattle, first class, put me up in like a 5-star hotel to do press out there because they wanted me to go on debate on these shows. It's like a whole free speech thing. I go, I just tell dick jokes. It's not that complicated. I don't do politics on stage. I'm just, you know, so. But anyway, what happened was as soon as these other clubs heard it, like there's a club in Tacoma, Washington, 20 minutes outside of Seattle, said, we'll take you that weekend. So they honored the weekend. Come on over to our club. So
did that happen yet?
Yeah, I'm already booked.
No, but did the makeup show, did you actually do it yet?
No, it's not till like the September, October.
Okay.
So I guess my act is offensive in this city of Seattle, but 20 minutes outside the suburbs, it's fine.
We're truly in crazy times because, of course, I've known you forever and we've been friends forever. And I've seen your comedy and it's not that offensive to me.
It's not.
It's funny, but I wouldn't look at it as like this controversial thing that needs to be canceled. Like, what is going on?
I don't know.
Insanity.
I have no idea. You know, usually a club won't book. They'll go, no, we'll pass on that kind of act or whatever. You never know about it because your agent won't tell you. You go, no, we'll find you a club. They rarely book you and then cancel you 2 weeks later because we're all selling tickets. They actually thought that our audience was going to come into that little town in Seattle, that little area, and mess with the people in that town. They were afraid of our audience coming in.
It's crazy, crazy, crazy times. Hey, before Ace gets here, and you're welcome to sit in with that if you want, but you've been running around this ship the last 5 days just like me. We've been hosting a lot of stuff, doing a lot of stuff, seeing a lot of these bands, even if it's not full performances, getting a taste of what they're doing. Do you have any highlights for you that jump out to you as far as what you've seen so far?
There's been so many. I mean, KK's Priest yesterday in Studio B was insane. If you can get in there, like Ripper said, that was the only place people could get turned away. Yeah. Except both nights at Studio B were unbelievable. And then Y&T in the theater, I think it was the first night or the second night of the cruise. And then Glenn Hughes on the stage 2 nights ago at the pool stage. I've never seen anything like it. I'm looking forward to seeing him tonight. So those are the ones that have shown for me so far.
Yeah, I mean, Y&T really jumped out because, I mean, everything you said I agree with, but Y&T really jumped out for me because, again, Dave's coming back after battling cancer and everything he's been through, and for him to still be that good is just astonishing. It really is. Singing and playing, just remarkably, remarkably great. So that jumps out, and I had never seen The Darkness live before, and I was really entertained by them, and I thought they were real live in your face, like AC/DC, like hard rock. They were just killer. A lot of great performances. Here comes Ace, as you could probably hear from the crowd as he makes his way to our broadcast position. Come on up, buddy. Take a seat, get a headset on. Right here. Give it up for the Ace, everybody. You know Jim from my TV show, right?
What's up, Ace?
Let me get these on you. Hold on. We're getting Ace situated here. Throw those on if you don't mind. And then we'll get some level on you, and there we go. How you doing, man?
Good.
Hold on.
I don't. Test 1, 2.
Yeah, we're live on the air. Ace Frehley, everybody, let's hear it. How have you been enjoying your cruise so far? Two great performances, played the new song, 10,000 Volts at both. How have you liked being on the ship?
I've been having a blast, man. I'm more excited about how well the record's doing.
Yeah, congratulations, great. Great chart numbers coming out yesterday. Great response to it. That's got to feel great after all these years.
Yeah, I've never had chart positions this high on an album.
What? We're right outside the casino here on the casino floor.
That's my next stop.
I was just going to ask you. I was just going to ask you, did you get in there yet and play
Not
some cards?
Yet, but it looks good to me right now.
And Ace, you can get paid in advance, too. So I did. I already lost half of mine in the casino.
How do you get paid in advance? What do you mean?
I got it paid 2 days ago. Went right to the casino.
Oh, you got paid for
for here.
And you lost it in the casino already. Yeah, you got to be careful you don't lose what you're making on this show.
Did they take real money?
Yeah. Yeah, they take, yeah.
Like a $100 bill?
Yep.
Slides into the slots?
Yep.
Nice.
You've done rock cruises before. You did the Kiss cruise, right?
This is my third cruise. I did the Rock Legends cruise about 8-10 years ago, and then I did the Kiss cruise, and that was kind of okay.
Do you like cruises? You like being a part of them?
Yeah, I mean, they're okay. You know, it's just if there's a storm, man. Because I did the Rock Legends cruise, and I did an outdoor concert, and it was 15-foot waves, and the fucking Marshall amps were like, my roadies were behind the amps holding them up because they were going to get blown down.
Yeah, you don't want to do that outside.
Is that Ron Yakayama?
That's my friend.
How do you spell his last name?
Akiyama, A-K-I-Y-A-M-A.
Akiyama?
Yeah, yeah. You know Ron Akiyama. Forever.
Yeah. Where's the sushi?
Hey, tell me about your performances. Did you feel good about the shows you did on the cruise?
Yeah. I mean, I could have done better, you know. You know, I always perform better when we have, you know, like a long group of shows. And the band has a chance to really tighten up. But, you know, these were like one-offs, so I think I went out okay. You know, I put a lot of energy into it, and we rehearsed in my suite upstairs prior to the first show, and that helped.
Was on this cruise the first time you played a song from the new record when you played 10,000 Volts? Was that the first time you played it?
No,
live?
I played it. I did a three-show run, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago.
Okay.
And we played it three times, and that's going to probably be a staple in the set. I'm just trying to figure out what's the next single to perform.
I would think probably Cherry Medicine, right?
Cherry Medicine is an easy song to sing and play, so
you know, the track that's standing out from your record that a lot of people are really liking that hasn't been released as a single yet is Fighting for Life. People really like that one.
Well, what's the deal with that? Everybody loves that fucking song.
I think it's just a good hard rock, high energy song. I think people really. It reminds me a little bit of the song you did on Trouble Walking, Too Young to Die, that Richie Scarlett sang. It's got that kind of feel to it, I think.
Yeah, so. I wrote that line, you can be the hunter or you can be the prey. I thought that was a cute line.
Yeah. Hey, I'm also surprised that they allowed you to do the smoking guitar on the cruise ship. I thought they'd be worried about it setting off the fire alarms, but you did it with no problem, right?
I didn't ask. I just did it. You know, but my old smoking guitars used to have smoke bombs, but my new ones have miniature fog machines. So that's a lot safer.
Okay. You know. And did you set it off in the wrong song the other day? It's on the internet today that you set it off in Cold Gin by accident or something.
Yeah, halfway through, and then it subsided. And then when I started doing my real solo, when everybody left the stage, I turned it back on towards the end.
And I don't know if you caught wind of this or not. I mentioned it earlier, but the band that played after you, this band, The Darkness, they were unhappy about being on late, and their singer took a number of shots at you from the stage. Are you aware of that?
No, I was already in bed.
I was just wondering if you had any response.
Actually, he takes shots at me. He gives me two great reviews on YouTube, and then he's taking shots at me. Like, for what? You know, the reason why we went over was because the fucking band before us went over.
Right, that's what I heard.
No, I was...
We had to cut two fucking songs.
Yeah, I was there for KK's Priest. They were before you. All the production was way behind. There was a problem with the sound.
And the guy in The Darkness is blaming me for it? Bullshit.
Yeah. Right, so you were behind, and then The Darkness was behind, so...
Everything got pushed back. Everything was running late at one point or the other.
There's John.
Johnny O.
Hey!
So, Ace, we'll let the audience ask you a few questions because I could talk to you forever. But just before we let the audience ask questions, what do you have as far as coming up? Are you have a bunch of tour dates for the record. I know you got dates already on the books.
I hired a new agent prior to the release of the album, and he's got a ton of casino dates and outdoor festivals that I'll be doing this year, and they keep coming and coming. He says his phone's ringing off the hook. So I'll be touring all through the summer and the fall in the States. I wanted to go to Europe, but I couldn't make it happen. You know, they don't want to give me my fucking passport back because I owe the government a lot of money.
So how did you have any trouble getting on the ship?
No, interestingly enough, you know, I didn't think I'd be able to de-boat. Is that what you say?
You could. You
what's
can
the,
say
what's
it.
The, what's the I don't know. Terminology?
Disembark?
Well, you deplane and you, or
deboat.
You deboat. That's an aceism. But, yeah, they said the only passport you really need is your key card.
Right. So you did get off the boat.
Oh, I got off in Mexico and I got off today.
No problem. So you got back. All right, good.
Got in my room about 2:30, took a nap, and here I am.
Anybody, well, we have our friend in the front row in a bikini that wants to ask a question again. Was your name Marie again?
My name is Marie. I'm from Kansas City.
Nice bikini.
Yeah, Marie, you can ask 4 questions in a row.
She already asked KK if she will golf with her.
Right?
Yeah.
I listen to you every day on the radio.
All right, Marie, what's your question? We got a line of people.
I am so confused. Like, I met you in 87 at Streetside Records when you did it in store.
Did we
and
have
the
sex?
Manager. No. We didn't. But
if it's in the 80s, I have to ask that because I have no memory.
Well, my manager introduced you and said, Ace Frehley, and you said, it's Frehley. I'm confused. Are you Ace Frehley or Frehley?
That's good.
I get Frehley, I get Frehley. And
well, what really?
It's really Frehley.
I knew it was.
Of course. You're on top of it.
It's Frehley. It's Ace Frehley.
Listen to the live album. Paul says, Ace Frehley, lead guitar.
Yeah.
That solves the whole fucking problem.
I will call you
problem.
Ace Frehley.
All right. That's Do you have a question, or was that it?
Yeah, I wanted to know how to pronounce his name.
All right. Well, you got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good question. Go ahead. Who's up next? Hey, man.
Bobby Dreher, Doylestown. Ed, thank you. Ace, real cool. Thank you for signing the guitar yesterday. Really appreciate it with Scotty, who painted it. Yeah. Of you.
That's for charity, right?
Yes.
Okay.
How was it working with Steve Brown?
The best. Me and Steve are like salt and pepper. When I got together with Steve, we clicked, and the album is, you know, it wouldn't have been half as good without Steve's input because, you know, not only is he a good guitar player and a good singer and a good songwriter, but he's an excellent Pro Tools engineer. So normally I have to pay a guy to engineer when I bring in, you know, famous people to record. But, you know, I'm doing the record. It's just me and Steve in my studio, and he's doing all the Pro Tool moves, and then, you know, he's recording my vocals and guitar solos, and it's wonderful. See, as far as I'm concerned, the less chefs in the kitchen, the better. See, I'd rather record with just one other person, possibly two.
Well, 10,000 volts is amazing, and thank you for putting it out. And the video's incredible. Keep rocking for us,
Ace. I'm kind of leaning towards Cherry Medicine.
3 videos out now from the record, so go check those out as well.
My fiance was in Cherry Medicine.
Yeah. Lara. So, Ace, one of the things that Steve told me, too, that he was good at doing with you or that he felt was kind of the thing to do was to push you, to motivate you a little bit, to say, hey, we're going to get 2 vocals today. Let's go. I'm coming over. So having a guy that was, like, physically in the same area, you live in New Jersey, he lives in New Jersey, that could actually come over and, like, literally get you out of bed.
Yeah. No, Steve's great because he's a bundle of energy. He's doing 10 different things at once. And when we get together, he pushes me. And I need to be pushed a lot of the time. You know, I'm 72. I get lazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we all get lazy sometimes. Go ahead, sir, with your question for Ace Frehley.
Hey, Ace. Sean from Atlanta, Georgia. First concert I saw in 1977 was actually the same one that Eddie saw at Madison Square Garden. Bill, my father was actually Bill Acoin's dentist. He was on Central Park South.
What?
And got us.
What is he talking about?
And actually got us tickets, 16th row. So first concert, very overwhelming, in fifth grade. You inspired me to actually pick up a guitar.
You should have got a tank of that gas.
Oh, the dentist.
The question I have is, when you were doing the solo for Shock Me, obviously it's in the key of A, but what was the inspiration to actually start kind of finger tapping? Kind of.
I have no idea how I do guitar solos. They just come to me. You know, like, for example, the last five albums I've done, you know, we're recording at the Pro Tools, and, you know, Steve or whoever the engineer is, my other engineer is Alex Salzman, they'll just, like, dedicate six tracks, and I'll do six solos in a row, and then we'll listen back to them. Sometimes we take the front end of one, the middle part of another, and the end of a third. But somehow, some way, you know, turns out to be a good solo. And
the greatest things about your solo is that they're memorable, and you could actually hum them, and that's a sign of excellence. So thank you, Ace. Thank you for inspiring
me. My pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for your question. And that's the thing, Ace. You've said many, many times, you had a great line that I read recently. You said, if I knew I was going to influence so many people, I would have practiced more.
I've been saying that for fucking 25 years.
That's great, though, because you just go for it, man. I think that's the beauty of your style.
I am totally not that great a guitar player. You know, some people think I'm God. You know, I never took a guitar lesson. I play sloppy. I make mistakes. But I have the swagger, and I have the attitude, and I have the look, and I can fucking pull it off.
Yeah. Well, you've been doing it for 50 years, so you absolutely can.
I got to be doing something right.
Exactly. Go ahead, sir.
I'm a little nervous right now.
Don't be nervous.
I understand Jim's here. I know that's hard to deal with.
Go ahead. Hey, you know, the B is, that's the Gucci.
Yes. We're from Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
Oh, got a question. Back in the early 80s, you released a song, a demo, Ecstasy, which turned into Back in My Arms Again, which was on your album Now. Great. Why was that song back in the 80s never released? Because I feel that could have been a number one hit.
I have so many songs in the can that I have recorded that I just never decided to release. And I was in Steve Brown's studio after we had tracked a couple of songs, and we were going through the internet and listening to songs, and he spotted the demo for Back Into My Arms Again, and he goes, what the fuck is this? I go, it's some song I wrote 40 years ago. And he listened to it, and he goes, we got to redo this. I said, all right.
Yeah, are there any other songs on 10,000 Volts that have been around that long, or was everything else pretty much newly written?
No, well, I did a cover of a song called the one by Nadia, Life of a Stranger. I love this fucking song. The first time I heard it was like 22 years ago. It goes over the credits for the movie The Transporter with Jason Statham. But I never forget a good song. And I love the lyrics and I love the theme. But, you know, she did it very Euro rock and kind of sparse. You know, and I said, if I do it, we'll do it with drums and power chords and shit. And I think it came out great.
And the other thing that we should mention real quick before we take another question about the new record is that anybody that knows anything going back to 78, your albums have always ended with an instrumental. For a long time, it was Fractured Mirror, Fractured 2, Fractured 3. Tell me about the instrumental that closes this record.
It's the tradition.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Steve came up with the original picking part, and then I did all the solo work under it. And I think it came out great, you know. I mean, Steve is an excellent guitar player. His two favorite guitar players in the world was me and Eddie Van Halen, God rest his soul. And so it was such a pleasure and a joy for him to work with his idol, you know. But he, you know, he's very professional, and he's not afraid to tell me, you know, this isn't working. Like, what was the song we were doing? Walking on the Moon. And I said, the song needs a bridge. He goes, no, it doesn't. I go, yes, it does. So I wrote a bridge in 5 Yeah, we work like that.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. What's your question for Ace?
Yeah, just a quick question. What was the first guitar you ever bought?
I got a guitar for my dad for Christmas when I was 13. It was one of those old Japanese guitars. Pulled it out of a pawn shop window, you know, a Kent or a Zimgar, or, you know, they had crazy names. And I don't even know where the hell it is. It might still be in the back of my locker. I have two huge lockers up in Westchester filled with stuff that I don't even know what's in it. So if we could find that, you know, we'd auction that off for a lot of money, huh?
Yeah, that would be a pretty great piece of rock history right there, if yeah, in fact it was still around, no doubt. Thank you. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, sir.
Come on up. Yeah. A few more minutes.
Ace, real quickly, I want to congratulate you on the new album. Kiss hasn't come out with a good song.
20 years?
Question. On Trouble Walkin', you cover Hide Your Heart, or you do a version of Hide Your Heart. Yeah. How did that ever come to be? How'd you decide to use that song?
Paul wrote that song with, who was the other songwriter?
Holly Knight and Desmond Child.
Yeah. He wrote it with Desmond and Holly, and he actually, I tracked it, and he somehow got a hold of a rough mix of it. He called me up on the phone, and he said, I would rather you didn't do this song. And I said, well, Gene, you know, I think my version came out great. I'm leaving it on the record. And then you remember when you worked at a station, we did a poll where yeah, they played Kiss's version or my version or mine won.
Yeah. Well, so there's more to this story, because at that time is when I was working with Ace on the label. That came out, the records I did with Ace back in the day.
Yeah.
And that actually was, the late, great John Regan had the demo for that. And I actually went to a listening party for the Kiss album Crazy Nights, which that song, Hide Your Heart, was supposed to be on.
Really?
And because I had the demos for that record. And I went to the listening party. It was at the Hit Factory in New York. And I heard the record playback, and the song wasn't on Crazy Nights. And I was shocked that it wasn't on the record, because I thought it was a great song. So that's when I told Ace and John, I said, hey, this demo, you should do it. I didn't know that Kiss was going to do it on their next record.
Wow.
And I remember after that listen, I don't know if I've even told you this, and after that listening party, I went up to Gene and Paul, and I said, how did you guys not record Hide Your Heart for this record? And they go, how do you know about that song? I said, I got a demo from it.
Paranoid.
And then I went and I brought it to Ace, and John loved it, and then they ended up recording it. But I do remember Gene calling the office at Megaforce when we put that record out, and he was like, I'd prefer you guys did not do that. And, of course, we just couldn't wait to do it then.
Good for you.
Yeah. I spent time and money recording it, and if it didn't come out great, I would have, you know, put it on the back burner. But I think my version came out really good, and the way it goes.
Let me tell you this, and I don't know if you know this, but I interviewed Holly Knight recently because she put out a book about a year ago.
I read it.
And she says, it's as a co-writer of that song, of the, because there's more than just the Kiss and Ace version. There's two other artists that covered it as well.
Molly Hatchet did it.
An artist named Robin Beck did it. A lot of people did it. Nobody had a hit with it, but they did it. And Holly Knight said of all the versions of that song that Ace's is her favorite. And she co-wrote it. So.
Yeah, well, me and Holly, I know Holly in the biblical sense.
She says that in her book. She does say that in her book. But it was crazy. It was interesting to hear her say that. And she also says that Paul Stanley tried to get her out of taking any publishing for writing the part in it too. So
those guys are cheap.
Go ahead.
Hey, there's my drummer, Scotty Coogan over
Coogie
there.
Coogie Monster. Scotty, throw on some headphones if you want. We're on for another 10 minutes, and I got to let Ace go. We got Satriani coming soon. But if you want to jump in, no, there's another set there, Jim.
That's fine.
It's too, all right.
Hi, Jim. You sounded, you were funny.
Go ahead with your question.
Hey, Ace. Mike from Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing? Several years ago, you did a 1978 Kiss solo album in its entirety. You recorded it. Do you have any intentions on releasing it? And with the 50 years coming up, do you plan on doing it again?
I don't know. You know, it's, I live life one day at a time. The thing you're talking about, that's where I met Laura. In fact, I brought her in for the show, and then I said, let's hook up after the concert. And she had to run home because she has two kids, and she had to pack up. She was painting glasses with all the guys in Kiss on it and other famous rock stars. And unfortunately, we didn't hook up until 6 months later after she came to a couple of shows. And
thank God.
Then we found out, and I found out she was my soulmate. You know,
and she's a diamond.
You're a lucky man, Ace.
Scotty Coogan, everybody.
Hello.
What's up, Scotty?
Hi.
Scotty, position that mic a little further up there, please. And you lost your windscreen.
Oh my God,
somewhere.
A windscreen.
You're falling
Where's
apart
the
on
pop
me, buddy.
Screen. That's okay. I'll try not to say too many P's.
We'll find it when we're done. Okay. Scotty is a valuable part of Ace's live band because not only do you play great, but you sing great as well.
Thank you.
And you even sang, I think I saw you do Love Gun yesterday, right? Which you've done before.
I sing Love Gun, yeah. Ace asked me to sing Love Gun. Of course I'm going to do it. He used to say that I sing it better than Paul Stanley.
You do?
Yeah.
And you don't use backing tracks.
No backing tracks here, baby.
Oh.
No backing tracks at all in our show. None.
If I lost my voice, I'd hire a lead singer.
Nice to hear somebody else say it for a change than just me, right? Thank
yeah,
God.
Yeah, it's like, but I got, my band right now has four lead singers.
Canaries.
Jeremy sings, he sings, I can't hear
it. There it is.
Jeremy sings lead, Scotty sings, he's probably the best singer in the band. And then I got Ryan on bass singing lead, he does Detroit Rock City. So
Detroit Rock City!
Yeah, they're all, and we got three-part harmony happening.
Yeah, we do.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's a good band. Thanks for having me back.
Sure.
Yeah, Scotty, you were out for a little while. It's once you thought you were out, they pull you back in, just like The Godfather, right?
I've been in and out. I quit once. He hired me back and then fired me, and then he has me back now again. So it's good to be back. Yeah. It's good to be back. Thank you.
The Coogie Monster back in the band.
We're brothers. We're brothers, positive, you know?
We get a lot of positive energy from Scotty.
Yeah, we're brothers.
You look better on the drums than my previous drummer. No offense to Matt Starr.
Who?
Anybody else got a question before we let these guys get out of here? We good?
Come on, I came all the way down here.
Come on, let this guy get over there.
Go ahead, Joe.
What's up, Ace?
How you doing, Joe?
How you doing? Just to let you know, there are three versions of Hide Your Heart. Robin Beck, Bonnie Tyler.
We said that.
Did you say Robin Beck?
We said it, yeah. What's your question?
Yep. Okay, live... Live Plus 4, the home video. Is that getting reissued on a DVD or a download?
That's one, too. Yeah. Huh? What?
Live Plus 4.
I can tell you he's not going to know that. He's asking about that live video that we did back when Atlantic in the 80s, if it's getting reissued, but you don't. I don't know. How would you know that? You don't know that, right?
I don't know.
Exactly.
Okay. I thought it was a good shot anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember doing the video in on 125th Street at the Apollo Theater. We did...
We never played that song together.
You know what?
For 20 years, we've never done Do Ya.
Yeah, that's because it's not the easiest song to play, and there's a lot of harmony.
Yeah, it's ELO. Yeah. You know, it's not you.
And it's not super rock and roll.
Right. People want to hear your songs and Kiss. That's what they want to hear, right? Right?
You know what I would like to see set list-wise? Personally, you have a big catalog now of your own songs. The four Megaforce records, Anomaly, Space Invader, all that. I'd love to see you get more of that in there. You know, I'd love to see you do more of the solo stuff from that versus here. And I understand people love Shout It Out Loud, Detroit Rock City, but when I come see you, I'd love to hear you do your own stuff, like that from your solo stuff.
You know, the problem is the majority of the people want to hear the hits.
Yeah, Kiss is done.
You know, Steve Brown called me up and he goes, you got to add Rock and Roll All Night and Shout It Out Loud.
We used to do Shout It Out Loud back then.
In your new set.
Yeah.
And they're fun to play, and then, you know, I remember them. And
Kiss is done, so why shouldn't we?
Good memories about it. And he said it was like Rock and Roll Night is number 5 on Spotify, so... People want to hear it, you know. It's a great sing-along song, and we have fun doing it.
Well, listen, man, congratulations on the album. 10,000 Volts is killer. And doing really well on the charts, which is great to see. 3 videos out there right now. You can see them on YouTube. Check them out.
Killer Medicine.
Yeah, and good stuff, man. Good to have you out kicking ass. Look for Ace concert dates coming your way. And look for him in the casino on the ship in a few minutes.
Thank you, Ed.
hopefully doing all right with the cards out there. And give it up, everybody, for the legend, Ace Frehley. Let's hear it.
Ed, thank you for having me on.
Always. And last but certainly not least, closing out our broadcast and our time here on the Monsters of Rock Cruise is one of the headliners of this incredible event, and it is Joe Satriani. Good to see you, Satch. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me here. Finally made it. Hey, everybody.
How is your 2 performances are under your belt now? You've done them. You're done. You got the night off tonight. How'd everything go?
It was great. Yeah. It was great. I mean, I walked into this not knowing what it was going to be like. Never did a cruise ship.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, never.
Your first time cruiser, period?
Period,
like,
yeah.
Not even like vacation, family, nothing?
Yeah, nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
What, okay, so before we get to your shows, what's your thoughts about a cruise?
This has been fun.
Yeah?
It has been a lot of fun. I loved it. The staff here is great. Accommodations are great. Food's great. Lots to party everywhere, like you know. Oh, you were out with Kenny last night.
I was
night.
Preparing off your drummer last night. We had a good time.
You know what that's all about. Yeah. So, and then so many good musicians floating around.
Yeah.
Great bands to see. I wish I had more time. I mean, I was doing double duty, so because I had the art shows to do.
Right.
And then the actual music show. So, it's been a lot of work, but a lot of fun.
That's really the only criticism of this cruise, and this is the 12th one, and I've hosted every one. It's almost an embarrassment of riches because there's so many bands and musicians. You can't see everything. It's impossible. There's stuff that overlaps. As I just told you, I was so bummed because when you played yesterday, it was in the window I'm here on the air. So I couldn't physically be 2 places, obviously. So I missed that. But you brought up Richie Kotzen and you brought up Nuno to play with you yesterday.
Yeah.
How was that? What did you guys play?
Fantastic. It was like a little G3.
I was going to say.
On the water. We did some classics that we were doing on the G3 tour this past month. So, we did Crossroads and we did Going Down, of course. That's kind of like our ceremony song. It was just... It's for me, it's always mind-blowing to bring up amazing guitar players and be totally surprised at their angle, you know, how they like to contribute to songs like that. And everything is unexpected, and you got to play your best and be on your toes, you know, because they're throwing musical shapes at you that are coming from left field. And those guys are amazing. I mean, did I mention that?
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, they're 2, along with yourself, among my favorite guitar players ever. And I think in some ways, well, maybe not so much Nuno, because he's, especially with this last record and that solo with Rise and all, with the noise that made. But Richie, Richie's a close friend, and I'm an enormous fan of his playing, singing, writing, everything. And I think in a lot of ways, he's probably a tad underrated, in my opinion. I mean, I think he's a guy that should be a household name, and it's just not quite, but, you know. Every single thing he does seems to build on stuff. So,
yeah.
And I know he was real jacked to get up and play with you yesterday and be able to do that.
That was great. We'd never done that, actually. I've known him for decades.
Yeah.
And like you, just been blown away. Every time I see him, I go, oh, my God, this guy's got everything.
He makes it look so easy, too. No pick. It just kind of walks around like it's nothing.
And his musicianship, his playing is so deep. He's got so many little areas where he can totally shred. Vocally, guitar, everything.
Yeah.
We'll stay in touch and we'll see if we can make something happen.
Yeah, that would be cool. Now, you also, the first performance you did on the ship, you bought up some guitar players too. Did you get Joel up there?
Yeah, Joel Hoekstra finally came up. That was really great.
Yeah.
I really like Joel. He's such a fantastic guitar player, musician, performer. You know, I told him I think he was thinking like, where do I stand? What should I do? And I said, you just come up here and just go crazy. You know, just do your thing. And it was great just to see him like take over the stage. It was, that's exactly what I want. So I get to be entertained when players do that, and they come and they bring 100% of what they do, you know.
Yeah, I was really excited to see how many people here on this ship were excited to see you and came out and see you. And what I mean by that is, of course, everybody knows Joe Satriani. Everybody is a huge fan of your playing. But this cruise is historically a lot of, like, you know, party rock bands, you know. Yeah. And I was like, is that audience going to want to watch mostly instrumental or all instrumental music? Because the only other guy that comes to mind that has done this cruise in the 12 that there's been that is predominantly instrumental is Steve Vai.
Oh, right.
Vai was on a few years ago. But when Steve did it, he brought up, like, Sebastian Bach, and they did Shy Boy.
Oh, wow.
And he recruited singers to go up and do various songs with them. So he kept that end. But watching you and seeing the place packed, there was no problem at all in terms of fan engagement. They were full on into it.
That was great. Fantastic audience both nights. Really great. Let us do the weird stuff, the straight-ahead stuff, and... And, of course, they loved it when the guests came out.
Yeah. So last we spoke, at least on the air, was, of course, with Michael and Sammy and Jason way too early in the morning in Los Angeles when Sammy announced this whole big tour that's coming up where you guys are going to play a lot of Van Halen songs. And I've been told that the response to that run coming up in terms of fan excitement and tickets sold has been phenomenal, even better than people expected.
Yeah.
I also know that when you did that, both on my show and on the Howard Stern show, you had had like zero time to prep or prepare at all for what was happening. And you had people like myself and Howard throwing songs out to you and saying, Joe, play this, play that, where you literally had no time at all to dig into it.
Yeah,
and you
yeah.
did it spontaneously on the air.
Yeah, why not?
So were you okay? Like, for there, you know, there's a segment of people out there like, well, Joe's not going to know how to play Mean Street.
Right.
You're going to get, I'm sure you have dialed it in in preparation, because you had no preparation, right?
Yeah, you know what I was doing leading up to that? I was painting guitars for this cruise, actually. We had maybe 12 guitars to paint, and we had a number of canvases. And when Sam had called, I kept saying, it's not a good time for me. You know, I'm not going to be practiced. I'm going to be painting like right up until we do it. But there was no other time where it was going to work out with Howard. At least I know that much. So, but it's all in good fun. Everybody knows our history. We've been around long enough. Everyone knows that we're going to rise to the occasion. Sammy and Mike were amazing. You know, that's amazing to hear them sing that early in the morning.
Oh, my God. Crazy.
Anyway.
And, you know, I'll tell the audience this, and this is something that maybe people don't know, but I actually going into that and talking to the various camps and the people and everything, that I was told that everyone said, like, we may not want to or be able to play a full song because you guys had not physically been together at all. You literally got, like, you were together like an hour. Like, there was zero prep, zero rehearsal, zero. It was just, and I actually pushed back and I said, everyone will know that. Just having fun with it. Like, you know, I loved watching you kind of like, I think I remember it was like this. I love that stuff because you're Joe Satriani. Of course, you're going to nail everything. But to see you, like, mentally go through Eddie Van Halen stuff was just so cool to me. And since then, have you honed in on what you're going to play on this tour and really begin to rehearse it, or has that not happened yet?
Well, I got to say, it's been busy. So the first thing I started to try to achieve for that tour is to get the right amp. So I've been working with Third Power and the designer, Delana Scott, and she has been building these amps for me that nail, I think, the most important part of Eddie's sound for me, which was like Live Without a Net 86. Mm-hmm. That was a really interesting transition period between the Hagar and the Roth era. And it was still primarily Marshalls, and I won't go into all the technical details, but I just thought, if I start to play and I hear that sound coming out of my guitar, that's 90% of it right there. Most of the songs I know because I'm a fan, so I know them in my head.
Right.
My fingers haven't been around all those notes yet.
Right.
You know, I have been doing other things. On this very cruise, I've been monitoring a mix going on, the first single that Steve Vai and myself have been doing for an album we're working on. And that should come out in about 2 weeks, maybe. To announce the Satch Vai tour that we started around March 22nd in Florida. So I've got a schedule. You know, I had to do this, and I got to get those mixes together for the single. The amp thing is happening, and then once I get back home, I'll start to put together that list that I have to practice, because there's Montrose, there's Sammy Hagar, there's Chickenfoot stuff I haven't played in a very long time, as well as all the Van Halen stuff. So,
and that's another thing, too, that should be clarified, because, again, so much stuff kind of gets taken out of context or whatever. But that's another thing that should be clarified. This tour is not going to be just Van Halen.
That's right. Yeah.
You're going to play stuff beyond that, right? As you just mentioned, you're going to do... I mean, I know you always wanted to do Chickenfoot again. You're going to do some Chickenfoot?
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be at least two, maybe three Chickenfoot songs.
Soap on a Rope, I would love. Yeah, I love that one. That's like Montrose Jr. right there. I love that one. That would be killer. So that's great, man. It's going to be fun when this thing rolls out. There's a lot of people excited about it. I know you guys are going to nail it. Sammy's a freak of nature still vocally for his age.
Absolutely.
To sing that stuff.
He's a freak of nature.
In general, yeah. And then you got Michael with that high vocal, and then you've got Jason, just killer in there. And it's going to be amazing. I mean, it's just so overdue for this to happen, and I'm glad that Sammy's doing it. I'm glad that you guys put this together and are working together again. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm really psyched. It's all fun party music. That's what's really great about it. All those songs are just... they're so uplifting, and that's going to just make the whole show so much fun.
When are you going to settle in on honing in on actually all get the same room and actually start running through the set? That'll be a few weeks out.
Yeah, we have three different rehearsals scheduled, and what we'll probably do is hang out in a more of a casual way and really get the set nailed down. Like, what are we actually going to try to do? A few weeks after that, we'll do a non-production rehearsal where we'll just play everything to death and make sure we got everything nailed. And then right before the tour, we'll get together and we'll do production rehearsals on the actual stage.
And is there one Van Halen song that you want to really do, that you're going to go to bat for, that you want to play the most? Is there one or two that you're like... you're going to lobby to make sure you get in the set, whether it's the Roth or Hagar era, because you'll do some Roth era stuff, too. I know Michael will sing it or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really hard. I mean, there's so many of them that are great. I like the Hear About It Later.
In a Simple Rhyme, I love. Don't get me started.
Yeah. There's something about that it was, it was just a perfect spot for Eddie and the band and the way, and it just represented a lot of what they did that was so unique. It's not a hit. It wasn't one of their hit singles, but I like the simple stuff, and I like the complicated stuff because it's a good challenge, you know.
It's funny you mention Hear About It Later, because every guitar player I ever have interviewed, when I ask them about a favorite Van Halen album, outside of the first one, they always go to Fair Warning. Every guitar player loves Fair Warning, and I don't... Not being a musician myself, I can't pinpoint that because it all sounds amazing to me. But they all talk about his tone, the brown sound, all this stuff that they equate with Fair Warning. Yeah. So does that album for you also have a lot of meaning?
It's got a laid-back thing, which is really interesting. Because usually everything, Eddie's right in front. He's just like really so aggressive all the time. But then you get to a song like that, and he's kind of chill. And it's unique, and it creates this other part of Van Halen that was really great.
Yeah. So above and beyond this tour, you mentioned you're going to do a run with Steve.
Yeah, that's coming up next. Yeah.
And how long does that go for?
It's about 2 months.
2 months. Yeah. And is there a third player or just the two of
us? Just the two of us.
Because if it's third player, it's G3.
Yeah.
So you've got to keep it to two, I would think, right?
Yeah, we never, you know, it's funny. I mean, we've known each other forever, but we never actually did this where it was just the two of us. We go out and then we have new music that we're recording that we get to play live, and then we also get to jam. So it's kind of a G2 and a new album. Pre-new album tour, maybe.
So you've made a record, the two of you together, that's coming.
We're working on it. We're about three songs deep into it.
Okay.
And because of our work schedule, the work will be spread out over the next 9 months, and we'll get it done by the end of the year.
Steve playing that crazy Hydra thing that he's
I don't know what he's... You know, we're doing this remotely. That's the funny thing.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, right after the last G3 show at the Orpheum, we actually got together for the first time at his studio and sat down and just, like, played, like, when we were kids. And we're like, wow, like, here we are, starting all over again. But by then, a lot of the tracks had already been recorded, but I started them at my studio, sent them to Steve. Steve's sending them to Eric. Eric and Greg are doing the mixing. And so, yeah, it's being sort of pieced together because we're busy.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me about your artwork. You paint, you know, on this cruise over the past... previous cruises, there's, you know, Rick Allen's been on here, yeah, and Brian Wheat's been on here, and there's been a few guys that have done gallery stuff. You've got the gallery going on this particular cruise. You have a lot of pieces on board people can buy?
Yeah, there's guitars, there's canvases of all sizes, there's even prints. And Wentworth Gallery, fantastic working with them. And they've done quite a lot of cruises. I think they've done the Legends, they've done, yeah, the Kiss cruises, And that's great. I mean, it's a real trip. And earlier today, I was doing a little private performance for a lot of the people who stopped by and bought pieces at the gallery. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Richie, get up. Come up here. Richie's standing in the back.
There he is. He's
lurking. Pull Richie up. Throw a headset on real quick, man. We were talking about you. Your ears might have been ringing. We were talking about you performing with Joe. I didn't get to see it because I was here, but Joe was just giving you some love, and we were just having a nice chat about it.
Oh, cool.
How was that for you?
Wow. This is really loud. It was really great. Fantastic, and thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Honor. And a bit intimidating, but I made it through.
First time you played with Joe.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was really cool.
How did you guys differentiate what Nuno was going to do, what you were going to, or did you just do it on the fly?
No, we just do it instinct. On the fly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just play whatever you want.
Guitar player instinct.
Yeah, that was very, very, very cool to have seen some of it online already, but of course I was killing myself because I wasn't here. Yeah. I was here, but I wasn't able to get to it myself. So above and beyond all this, Joe, anything else you want to mention? That, I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Record with Vi. Date coming up. You got all this stuff going on. Anything else that I'm missing that you want to make sure?
That's enough.
Well, you know, you had texted me because you said your son was doing a documentary.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention that just yet, but I guess we can talk about it. He started this over a year ago. He wanted to make a film about not only G3, but the fact that he kind of grew up around G3. And he came out, he was 4 years old when he came out on the first tour. That was his first tour. He stayed with us all the tours, and at the Orpheum shows that I just mentioned, that was the first time he'd ever played guitar on stage. So he came on and he joined us for a summer song.
Oh, wow.
And I thought that was, like, really important for the director of the film to really understand what it's like, you know, to find out what his dad's been doing all these years.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what it feels like. So it was a great moment, and he's just got a couple of more interviews to do. But he's going into editing, and it'll take another 6-7 months.
So that'll maybe come out towards the end of the year or early next year.
We really hope so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah,
that
it's called Hero.
All right, awesome. Can't wait to see that. Richie, I'm curious. You came out as a kid playing instrumental guitar.
I did.
When did you – what did Joe mean to you and the success he had doing it? That had to be, like, a really inspirational thing.
Yeah, very inspirational. Yeah, absolutely. And I remember that record was just a huge record and kind of influenced all of us young guys coming up, you know, and kind of paved the way, you know, to have the confidence to be able to do, you know, instrumental music. So it was a huge influence.
And Joe, did you realize the impact of Surfing with the Alien and all of that, not just on guitar players, but just the viability of it being like, hey, you can have success doing things like this, you know, without a singer and making instrumental records and selling records and building a fan base and touring on it. I mean, as I've told you before, not a lot of people have made that at the level you have. Very few people have had actual hit singles doing it.
Yeah. If I had thought about what you just said, I would have been too frightened to continue. You know, I was just trying to make good music. I was trying to play the best I could. And every day someone new would come along, like this guy here, and I'd be like, oh my God, it's like, this is amazing. And there were so many great guitar players that were just starting out around the same time. So I didn't really catch my breath about that, you know. I was just kept moving forward, new music, new records, and tours, lots of touring.
It must have shocked you, though, when what you were doing became commercially successful. I'm sure that was the last thing you expected,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. We really thought, when we finished Surfing with the Alien, we thought that we just handed in, they terminate the contract, and we go back to, you know, teaching guitar, and John Cunaverty back to just engineering. So we were pretty shocked when they called and said, hey, you're on the Billboard charts, and you got to put a band together. And I don't know if people don't know this, but I never performed as an instrumentalist before. So I had no idea. I had no chops. You know, how do you walk out on stage and not sing? And not have a singer, you know?
Yeah.
I just didn't know how to do it. And we did it for about 3 weeks. And then I got the gig with Mick Jagger, and it was like a relief because I was stressed trying to figure out how not to have a singer in the band, you know? And how do you do instrumentals and keep people engaged? So I had a few months with Mick to sort of chill out and then watch Mick a lot. I learned a lot from him, how he could really work an audience, and then got back to it. And it just, you know, work.
Yes. You've never had to deal with lead singer disease.
No.
Yeah,
you never,
right?
You never had that affliction at any point in your career, which is amazing. Richie, when you starting out, like as a kid, for people that don't know, Richie started out playing instrumental guitar, Mike Varney's label Shrapnel and all of that. Were you hoping, did you think that that stuff would become commercially successful?
No.
Were you hoping to get a song on the radio? So
I was on the other side. I was in a band with great singers. Three great singers were in the band that I had formed when I was young. So they discouraged me from singing, even though I did. But my intent was always to be playing music with singing. And so I got the opportunity to make an instrumental record because my band had interest from a major label, and the guys just couldn't get it together in time or weren't interested or whatever the story was back then. We couldn't get more material up to the label in New York, and I was getting interest from Shrapnel out in San Francisco, and I was 18, you know, just out of school, getting, you know, military recruitment calls every day, and I thought, hey, I got a record deal on the table to go make an instrumental record. But after I did the first instrumental record, the president, Mike Varney, was like, all right, you got to sing. You know, it was Mike that encouraged me to sing. You know, so my second album, you know, I started singing, and then I got bought out by Interscope to make vocal records. And then, you know, whatever the story happened. But I was kind of the other side of it. I always wanted to make, you know, singing, you know, and writing lyrics. I wrote lyrics, that sort of thing.
Joe, you dabbled, of course, in doing some singing. I mean, there's a couple songs in your catalog where you sing, and I think they're quite good. Do you envision ever wanting to do more of that, having more songs like that on your records?
Probably not.
Staying in the instrumental zone?
Yeah, I would get into a character. I would approach it like an actor because I didn't have a real lead singer's voice. I had a limited range. But once I figured out, like, the character for Big Bad Moon or something like that, I could channel that sort of discipline into getting just that song done. And why I put them on the records was to allow me to play differently, because you play differently when you're working around vocals.
Yep.
And you don't have to do the melody. It's a totally different kind of arrangement, how you pace your playing. And so that made it fun. It also made it fun to throw them in during the live show, to have a couple where you can look at people and sing and they hear words and they can understand where you're going.
Yeah. Well, I only got a minute or two left here before I have to end, but Joe, anything that you want to tell obviously, again, everybody's going to see out there this summer with Sammy, Michael, and Jason and playing Van Halen, among other things. So everybody's psyched for that. You mentioned a record coming with Steve Vai.
Yep.
Your artwork, Wentworth Galleries. Anything I'm missing? The documentary coming down the road a little bit?
Yeah, I think what you're missing is you missed the other night when Richie played and Nunu played. I got to say, when you're standing on stage and this guy starts playing his guitar The sound is amazing.
Yeah, I know. I've been on stage when he's playing guitar.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's.
Or is it just too damn loud?
No. It can never be too damn loud. Never. No, really. Amazing player, amazing guitar tone. And he does it with his fingers, which is, perplexing, you know.
Well, the thing I talk about with Richie, though, is not to blow his head up too much, but I'm always conflicted with, I'm not sure if I like his voice or his guitar playing better. So that's an ongoing battle, which is a good problem to have because, you know, when you can do both that well, it's pretty amazing. But I haven't seen, didn't see Richie's set because, again, I was on the air when he did the first show. But you're playing today, right?
I am, yeah. 8:30, I believe.
Yeah, so you got a set tonight. I'll be out there for that, no doubt. I'm looking forward to seeing you do your thing. And I'd love to see you guys jam at a time when I can go sometime. And, hopefully you make something like that happen. But thank you so much for coming by. Appreciate it. Richie, anything you got coming up you want to mention?
I'm very excited. The last appearance I made was on a music video. My wife put out a single called The Ride, and she did a great video, and I did a solo for her, and Doug Pinnick came in and did some background. So if you haven't seen that music video, check it out. It's a great song.
It's just under your wife's name.
Julia Lagie, yeah.
L-A-G-E, right, if you want to find it online.
Yeah, and for me, I'm gearing up for a long European tour with my trio. I'm going back to that. We're going to do that tour, and then hopefully an American tour will follow in the fall. And I'm working on new music, too, so there could be a Kotzen record in the foreseeable future.
Not another 50 songs, though.
No, there'll be a lot less.
This lunatic put out a record with 50 songs on it.
I know.
And did it all himself. Come on. I love Richie because he's always against the grain. In a time when everybody's doing singles and have everyone with the short attention spans, he's like, here's my new record. Here's five CDs of 50 songs.
Right.
Enjoy. Dig into it. But, I love that about you, man. You just do your thing and make it work. So. All right, everybody, give it up for Richie Kotzen. Give it up for Joe Satriani. And all the great guests that we've had here. It's been absolutely amazing. Thank you for coming out and joining us here on the cruise. Well, that was a lot of fun. And as you guys are hearing this, I'm about to set sail on another cruise. I've got three of them in April, On the Blue and both Creed cruises. So I'll be spending a lot of time on the high seas for the month of April. Hope to see you out there if you're attending any of those upcoming cruises. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Be sure to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, X, Instagram, Facebook page. EddieTrunk.com is the website. And be sure to listen to me every day on Faction Talk, Sirius XM Channel 103. Trunk Nation is live Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 Eastern, anytime, live or on demand. On the SiriusXM app, be sure to check out SiriusXM.com/TrunkNation. Have yourselves a great week. Hope to catch you on the radio. Catch you back here next Thursday for another podcast.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.